are going to be in Esther chapter 4. Last week we left Mordecai wailing loudly at the king's gate. And we've seen in the provinces that others were also starting to put on sackcloth and ashes. But we're going to read through the whole thing of chapter 4. I did want to apologize. I understand why I created confusion on uncle or cousin, because I said uncle three times. After I listened to myself, I said it three times in like a 2-minute span. And then also at the end, I'm like his cousin. And it's like, oh, why didn't they? I said it. So it was my fault. Sorry for the confusion. It is her cousin. Hadassah or Esther and Mordecai are cousins. And so that was my fault. For the confusion that was created there. And I also want to apologize that sometimes when I do get straight off work and I come here, my mind is not set like it needs to be. And I felt like last week there's a lot of things. There's a lot of work and stuff going on. So I have to take that time before I come to just read through my lesson again. I didn't do that last week, so I apologize for where it felt like it was just kind of all over the place, because I seen it when I watched that video, and I hate watching my own video. But I knew I had to do it, and so I apologize for that. So I just want to make sure tonight I get my thoughts clear and what I'm trying to get across. I want to just kind of quickly review Esther chapter 3, because Esther chapter 3 was pretty much about Haman. Haman was introduced, and we find out that Haman was put in charge of all the princes. He became the second in command. King Ahasuerus went ahead and gave him that honor, made a command that people should honor him, bow down to him. We find out right at the beginning that Mordecai refuses. As Haman passes, Mordecai refuses to give him honor. Mordecai refuses to bow down. This caused anger within Haman. Haman decides he wants to not only attack Mordecai for his behavior, but he wants to go after all the Jews. And we learn that Haman is also called an Agagite, and it's right afterwards it says an enemy of the Jews. And so we believe that that is what a Agagite is actually referring to, is an enemy of the Jews. So he approaches King Ahasuerus, and he mentions about going ahead, and there's this people within your kingdom that they don't obey your laws, they have their own laws, and starts making it about the whole Jewish nation, because he wanted to destroy the whole Jewish nation. And so he approaches King Ahasuerus, he offers to throw money into the treasury for the people that would take care of what he's wanting to do. King Ahasuerus says, keep your money. Here's my signet ring. Write the law. Write the decree. So in chapter 3, we see where Haman goes ahead and has the law written that the Jews will be destroyed on the 13th day of the 12th month, and they will be completely annihilated, destroyed, killed, and annihilated. And all their possessions then would become plunder for the Media Persian people to take over all their possessions. We did find out that King Ahasuerus did know, because he sent out the couriers, told them all to go throughout his province and make sure that this decree was sent out to everyone and was issued throughout. And at the very end of chapter 3, what do we see? We see the capital city of Susa is in complete confusion. And that's where we'll pick up, chapter 4. And what I want to do tonight is just kind of read through all of chapter 4, and then I have some other things that I want to go to talk about sackcloth and ashes and fasting, because we're going to see these different things that were done. Even though God is not mentioned in the book of Esther, we're going to see that how this was something that was always done when people were going to God. God's people were going to Him. You always seen this. And we're actually going to see another nation that did this. And I didn't want to go into the New Testament. I wanted to go through some of the stuff that these people would have known, the remnant would have known, because they knew the writings of the previous prophets. They knew the writings of the different kings and what happened with the different kings. And so you're going to see throughout the time of history that the, God's people would have known these things. And they would have known that these were the things that you did if you were trying to get God's attention, if you were trying to reach out to God. So though it does not mention that anything about God in here, obviously these things will reflect and show that these people would have known this. This is how you approach God. So let's start in chapter 4, verse 1. So when Mordecai learned all that had been done, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the midst of the city and wailed loudly and bitterly. And he went as far as the king's gate, for no one was to enter the king's gate clothed in sackcloth. And in each and every province where the command and decree of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping and wailing, and many lay on sackcloth and ashes. Then Esther's maidens and her eunuchs came and told her, and the queen writhed in great anguish. And she sent garments to clothe Mordecai that he might remove his sackcloth from him, but he did not accept them. Then Esther summoned Hathach from the king's eunuchs, whom the king had appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what this was and why it was. So Hathach went out to Mordecai to the city square in front of the king's gate. And Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the exact amount of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him a copy of the text of the edict which had been issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show Esther and inform her and to order her to go into the king to implore his favor and to plead with him for her people. And Hathach came back and relayed Mordecai's words to Esther. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and ordered him to reply to Mordecai. All the king's servants and all the people of the king's provinces know that for any man or woman who comes to the king to the inner court who is not summoned, he has but one law, that he be put to death unless the king holds out to him the golden scepter so that he may live. And I have not been summoned to come to the king for these 30 days. And they related Esther's words to Mordecai. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Do not imagine that you in the king's palace can escape any more than all the Jews. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this." So I'm going to pause right there for a minute. And so what we're seeing now is a eunuch running between Mordecai and Esther, sharing their words back and forth. And what was Esther's response to Mordecai when he first tells her that she must go to the king? She starts making excuses, right? Starts saying, well, you know, the king's got a law, and if I'm not summoned, and then he's got all but one law, that they will be killed unless he holds out the golden scepter. So she starts making excuses. What's Mordecai's reply to her? Yeah, so he starts saying that, who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this, that you need to go do it. And if you don't do it, guess what? God will find someone else to take care of it. He doesn't say God, but we know that's what he's referring to, because he says that relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. Here again, I believe this is where we can truly know that he's referring to there's something that has control over this. And the Jews, just by what we see, what he has done with the sackcloth and the ashes and the wailing, in history, that has always been what the Jews did to reach out to God. And we're going to see that more here in a little bit. But Mordecai's letting her know, we will get taken care of one way or another. And if you don't do it, your name and your father's house will just perish. So then Esther sends a message back. Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai. Start in verse 15, verse 16 now. Go assemble all the Jews who are found in Susa, and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maidens also will fast in the same way. And thus I will go to the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went away and did just as Esther had commanded him. Now, one of the things I did point out last week, and I want us to always think about, is who do we go to first when we're in struggles? Are we going to God first? Mordecai, what do we see? He puts on the sackcloth and ashes and mourns and wails loudly. And again, we're going to go through here in a minute, showing this is how the Jews approach God when they were seeking deliverance. We're going to see it happen multiple times in history. And it happened out another nation besides the Jews that also did this when they found out that they were going into destruction. So we're going to look back at these. But where do we go first? And that's one of the things I want you to reflect upon. Where do I go when I'm in times of struggle, when I need deliverance? Am I going to other people, or am I seeking God first? And again, Mordecai's cousin is the queen, and he didn't go to her first. That was where he went afterwards. So he first went to God. Then he went to Queen Esther. Where do you go when you're in struggle? When you're challenged to do something that you know you have the ability to do you do it? When the challenge comes up, when God moves your heart to that you need to do something, do you fade away? Do you make excuses? Or do you realize that God will accomplish all things, as Mordecai pointed out here to Esther, that he will take care of the stuff. It will get taken care of. But are you allowing God to use you? Are you going to be like Esther and say, if I perish, I perish, but I have work to do? And so these are some of the attributes that we need to learn from Esther out of this story of things that we need to look at in our own lives. How am I doing? Do I have these same type of things? We've already talked about the humbleness that Esther had, the willingness to learn or to listen, and to follow advice from others. We know Mordecai's caring. We see that he also is one that approaches God. Are these attributes that we're putting into our life? Are we learning from the story? And do we realize that God does have control over all things, and we're just called to do the work as we're here on this earth? Let's flip over, because I do want to go back, and I have quite a few examples of different times where fasting and sackcloth and ashes and prayer was used. So flip over to Psalm 35. This is a psalm by David. We're going to start in verse 1. Psalm 35, verse 1. Contend, O Lord, with those who contend with me. Fight against those who fight against me. So what are we seeing right away here? How's David? What's going on with David right now here in verse 1? Yeah, there's some trouble, right? There's some contention. There's people against him. And so who does he go right now to? Who does he ask to take care of things? The Lord. You contend, O Lord, with those who contend with me. Fight against those who fight against me. Take hold of buckler and shield and rise up for my help. Draw also the spear and the battle axe to meet those who pursue me. Say to my soul, I am your salvation. Let those be ashamed and dishonored who seek my life. Let those be turned back and humiliated who devise evil against me. Let them be like chaff before the wind, with the angel of the Lord driving them on. Let their way be dark and slippery with the angel of the Lord pursuing them. For without cause they hid their net for me. Without cause they dug a pit for my soul. Let destruction come upon him unawares. And let the net which he hid catch himself. Into that very destruction let him fall. And my soul shall rejoice in the Lord. I shall exult in his salvation. All my bones will say, Lord, who is like thee? Who delivers the afflicted from him who is too strong for him, and the afflicted and the needy from him who robs him? Malicious witnesses rise up. They ask me of things that I do not know. They repay me evil for good to the bereavement of my soul. But as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. I humbled my soul with fasting, and my prayer kept returning to my bosom. I went about as though it were my friend or brother. I bowed down mourning as one who mourns for a mother. So what do we see in verse? This reminds me so much as I read some of these. It's like I could hear Mordecai almost saying these same things, right? That there's been traps set against me. When I do good, evil's been done against me. And so you see a lot of it. And what's David saying in verse 13? But as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. I humbled my soul with fasting, and my prayer kept returning to my bosom. So we see the sackcloth, we see the fasting, and we see prayer. All of them going together when David is seeking God to deliver him from his enemies. So that's one example we see of the Jewish people, or David, and he's a king. So the remnant would know these stories. They would know these stories of the past. David was well before, but he was the greatest king of Israel. They knew this. They knew this story. They would have known these psalms. Flip over to Psalm 69. We'll see another psalm of David. I'm going to read verse 1, and then I'm going to jump over to verse 9. Psalm 69, verse 1. Save me, O God, from the waters that have threatened my life. And then verse 9. For zeal for thy house has consumed me, and the reproaches of those who reproach, they have fallen on me. When I wept in my soul with fasting, it became my reproach. When I made sackcloth my clothing, I became a byword to them. Those who sit in the gate talk about me, and I am the song of the drunkards. But as for me, my prayer is to thee, O Lord, at an acceptable time. O God, in the greatness of thy loving kindness, answer me with thy saving truth. Deliver me from the mire, and do not let me sink. May I be delivered from my foes and from the deep waters. May the flood of water not overflow me, and may the deep not swallow me up, and may the pit not shut its mouth on me. So here again, we see David talking about needing deliverance, and he talks about the fasting, the sackcloth, and the prayer. Again, that was found in verses 10 and 11. Was it 9, 10, and 11? When I wept my soul with fasting, it became, yeah. So in verses 10 and 11, he's talking again about fasting and sackcloth. So we're seeing again, those two go together. What did we see Esther tell Mordecai to do? To also fast for 3 days. Mordecai was in the sackcloth and ashes. Esther tells him to fast for 3 days. So we're seeing David, same thing, fasting, sackcloth. And I got one more of David, and it's in 2 Samuel chapter 12. I tried to do these in the chronological order of when these things would have happened, and there were some other examples that I could have went to. I didn't pick them all, but I was trying to think of who's some of the ones that the people would have really known. And David is definitely one that people would have known the stories of. So 2 Samuel chapter 12, starting in verse 15. And this is after David. This is Nathan rebuking David, just in regards to what happened to Uriah and Bathsheba. And now he just gets done rebuking him, and now we see what's going to happen. So Nathan went to his house. Then the Lord struck the child that Uriah's widow bore to David, so that he was very sick. David therefore inquired of God for the child, and David fasted and went and lay all night on the ground. And the elders of his household stood beside him in order to raise him up from the ground. But he is unwilling and would not eat food with them. Then it happened on the seventh day that the child died. And the servants of David were afraid to tell him that the child was dead, for they said, "Behold, while the child was still alive, we spoke to him, and he did not listen to our voice. How then can we tell him that the child is dead, since he might do himself harm?" But when David saw that his servants were whispering together, David perceived that the child was dead. So David said to his servants, "Is the child dead?" And they said, "He is dead." So David arose from the ground, washed, anointed himself, and changed his clothes, and he came into the house of the Lord and worship. Then he came to his house, and when he requested it, they set food before him, and he ate. So here we see David fasting, diligently reaching out to God to spare this child's life. And then all of a sudden, God answers. And how did God answer? He took the life. Took the life of the son. And once that happened, then what did David do? Yeah, he washed, he ate, and he, before he ate, what did he do? He went and worshiped God. Right. He was waiting for God's answer. Kind of made me think about Mordecai. Why did Mordecai then possibly refuse Esther's request to put on clean clothes? Had God answered him yet? Had God gave him the answer he needed? Did God say how it was going to be delivered yet? He knew there was going to be deliverance. But what did David do? David here, we see that he stayed in this state until he got an answer from God. And once he got the answer from God, even though it was not the answer he wanted, he knew now he can get up. And now he can go ahead and clean himself up and worship God. Wasn't the answer he wanted, but he did move forward after he got the answer. Wasn't the answer he sought, but he was asking God. He was petitioning God. He was trying to get God to spare his child's life, and God said no. But he still understood that it was now time, once he had an answer, it was time to get up. Now it was time to worship God again. Because now he didn't need to petition. But at that time, he was fasting. Again, it's just, I'm trying to get us to realize that the Jews knew these stories that went on. They knew that it was sackcloth and ashes and fasting, what all that meant. I still don't know why, and we don't have the answer of why the writer of Esther does not tell us or use God in it. So I do have thoughts in my head, and I'm trying to keep them to myself because they are my thoughts and stuff. But again, the remnant would have known these things. If they read the story of Esther, they would have known what this all was about. Anyone afterwards would be able to recognize, just as like as we as Christians recognize, that these are acts that the Jewish people, God's people, did to reach out to God. Let's go ahead and get to a story that's a little closer than David, that's after David. And let's flip over to Joel chapter 2. Joel? Yep, Joel chapter 2. We're going to be starting in verse 11. Joel chapter 2, starting in verse 11. And the Lord utters his voice before his army. Surely his camp is very great, for strong is he who carries out his word. The day of the Lord is indeed great and very awesome, and who can endure it? Yet even now, declares the Lord, return to me with all your heart, and with fasting, weeping and mourning, and rend your hearts and not your garments. Now return to the Lord your God, for he is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, abounding in loving kindness and relenting of evil. Who knows whether he will not turn and relent and leave a blessing behind him, even a grain offering and a libation for the Lord your God. So here, this is God telling the Jewish people to what? To fast, to weep, to mourn, to rend your heart. That was his instruction, because he was talking about the day of the Lord is coming, and this is, again, not the end of times. This was going to be destruction upon the Jewish nation during this time. And God was during the Old Testament times, and he's telling them to what? To return to me with all your heart. And part of that was fasting and weeping and mourning, and to rend your hearts and not your garments. He's wanting them to return, and here's the instruction he gave them. This was, again, closer to the time of Esther. And let's flip over to 1 Kings chapter 21. Another king that was well after David, should have been for the northern kingdom. First Kings 21, starting in verse 18. And this is, actually I'll start in 17. Then the word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, "Arise, go down to meet Ahab, king of Israel, who is in Samaria. Behold, he is in the vineyard of Naboth, where he has gone down to take possession of it. And you shall speak to him, saying, Thus say the Lord, have you murdered and also taken possession? And you shall speak to him, saying, Thus says the Lord, in the place where the dogs licked up the blood of Naboth, the dog shall lick up your blood, even yours. And Ahab said to Elijah, Have you found me, O my enemy? And he answered, I have found you, because you have sold yourself to do evil in the sight of the Lord. Verse 21, Behold, I will bring evil upon you, and will utterly sweep you away, and will cut off from Ahab every male, both bond and free, in Israel. And I will make your house like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and like the house of Baasha, the son of Ahijah, because of the provocation with which you have provoked me to anger, and because you have made Israel sin. And of Jezebel also has the Lord spoken, saying, The dog shall eat Jezebel in the district of Jezreel. The one belonging to Ahab who dies in the city, the dog shall eat, and the one who dies in the field, the birds of heaven shall eat. Surely there was no one like Ahab who sold himself to do evil in the sight of the Lord, because Jezebel, his wife, incited him. And he acted very abominably in following idols, according to all that the Amorites had done, who the Lord cast out before the sons of Israel. So that was the end of verse 26. So here we find out that Ahab is getting rebuked by Elijah. God's rebuking Ahab through Elijah, in regards to the act of them taking over Naboth's vineyard and the evil that he has done, and that his family is going to be killed and eaten up by dogs. And let's see how Ahab responds in verse 27. And it came about, when Ahab heard these words, that he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and fasted. And he lay in sackcloth and went about despondently. Then the word of the Lord came to Elijah the Tishbite, saying, well, actually, verse 27, so now how do we see King Ahab responding? Tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and fasted. So another king, we're seeing another king doing this in regards to the words of the Lord that had come to him. So why would we think that he's doing this? What do you think he's about to do? He's going to appeal to the Lord again, right? Every time so far when we see this, we're seeing someone appealing to the Lord. Every time you see that sackcloth and ashes and the fasting, and it's always because they're going to appeal to the Lord for something. Again, in Esther, the remnant, the Jews, they would have known these stories. So verse 29, do you see how Ahab... This is the Lord speaking to Elijah. Do you see how Ahab has humbled himself before me? Because he has humbled himself before me, I will not bring the evil in his days, but I will bring the evil upon his house in his son's days. So how did the Lord respond? It got God's attention, didn't it? God recognized what Ahab was doing. That Ahab was humbling himself. And again, I mentioned that the sackcloth and stuff was also a way of showing humiliation, a way to humble ourselves before the Lord. You get to see that here. Ahab did it. God was responsive to Ahab's willingness to humble himself. And no longer would this happen during his time. Now it'll happen during his son's time. Coming a little closer, let's flip over to Isaiah 58. Isaiah 58, I want to start in verse 1. Isaiah 58, verse 1. Cry loudly, do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet and declare to my people their transgression and to the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me by day and delight to know my ways, as a nation that has done righteousness and has not forsaken the ordinance of their God. They ask me for just decisions. They delight in the nearness of God. Why have we fasted and thou dost not see? Why have we humbled ourselves and thou dost not notice? Behold, on the day of your fast, you find your desire and drive hard all your workers. Behold, you fast for contention and strife and to strike with a wicked fist. You do not fast like you do today to make your voice heard on high. It is a fast like this which I chose, a day for a man to humble himself. It is for bowing one's head like a reed and for spreading out sackcloth and ashes as a bed. Will you call this a fast, even an acceptable day to the Lord? Is this not the fast which I chose, to loosen the bonds of wickedness, to undo the bands of the yoke, and to let the oppressed go free and break every yoke? Is it not to divide your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into the house when you see the naked to cover him, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? Then your light will break out like the dawn, and your recovery will speedily spring forth, and your righteousness will go before the glory of the Lord. The glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call and the Lord will answer. You will cry and he will say, here I am. If you remove the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and speaking wickedness, and if you give yourself to the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then your light will arise in darkness and your gloom will become like midday. And the Lord will continually guide you and satisfy your desire in scorched places. And give strength to your bones, and you will be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose water does not fail. And those from among you will rebuild the ancient ruins. You will raise up the age-old foundations, and you will be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the streets in which you dwell. So here, could they do it in the wrong way? Could fasting be done in the wrong way? Yes, God was not pleased at the beginning, was he, with the way they were coming to him as they were trying to reach out to him. What did he tell them to do? Fix this stuff. Take care of the other things. Then come and fast to me. Then you will be answered and things will go your way. There is a way in which we are to approach God. And the fasting, again, Esther told Mordecai and them to fast for 3 days, and her maidens were going to do the same thing. And we have to recognize, as we do approach God, there's expectations God has for us. So often do we just ask him to do things without the willingness of ourselves to render our hearts to him as we go and approach him. Obviously, God has expectations for this. And again, this was closer to the time of the book of Esther. And I have two more quick ones to go over. And the next one may surprise you, because this is not the Jewish people going to do this. It's going to be another nation. As soon as I tell you where it's at, you're going to know who it is. Jonah chapter 3. Flip over to Jonah chapter 3. starting in verse 3. So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh according to the word of the Lord. Now Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, a 3 days walk. Then Jonah began to go through the city one day. Then Jonah began to go through the city 1 day's walk. And he cried out and said, "Yet 40 days and Nineveh will be overthrown." Then the people of Nineveh believed in God. And they called a fast and put on sackcloth from the greatest to the least of them. When the word reached the king of Nineveh, he arose from his throne, laid aside his robe from him, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat on ashes. And he issued a proclamation, and it said, "In Nineveh, by the decree of the king and his nobles, do not let man, beast, herd, or flock taste a thing. Do not let them eat or drink water. But both man and beast must be covered with sackcloth. And let men call on God earnestly, that each may turn from his wicked way and from the violence which was in his hands. Who knows, God may turn and relent and withdraw his burning anger so that we will not perish." When God saw their deeds, that they turned from their wicked way, then God relented concerning the calamity which he had declared he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. So even the people of Nineveh knew, how do you approach God? Even the king makes a decree that you're going to put on sackcloth, that you're going to fast, that you're going to turn from your wicked ways. So if the people of Nineveh knew that, why would the remnant of the Jews not know that that is what they're supposed to do as well? You can clearly see that there was godliness during the time of Esther. The people were appealing to God, even though it does not say it. You know that's why they were putting on sackcloth and ashes, and that is why they were fasting, because they were appealing to God. Now again, you got to remember that this was during the times of the Media-Persian rule, and it was ungodly, and they were in ungodly territory, and there was great confusion among the Jews at this time, and they went to God first. They decided that they need to reach out to God for deliverance, for saving. We read in the Psalms where David did that. When the enemies were against him, he sought God's retribution, that God will take care of it instead. And he did it by putting on the sackcloth and ashes, by fasting, by praying. We've seen it with Ahab. We see it now with the people of Nineveh. And my last example is in Daniel chapter 9. Daniel chapter 9, and we're going to start in verse 3. Actually, I'll just start in verse 1, because we need to understand the story behind it. In the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus of Median, descent who was made king over the kingdom of the Chaldeans, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, observed in the books the number of years which was revealed as the word of the Lord to Jeremiah the prophet for the completion of the desolations of Jerusalem, namely 70 years. So I gave my attention to the Lord God to seek him by prayer and supplication with fasting, sackcloth, and ashes. And I prayed to the Lord my God and confessed and said, "Alas, O Lord, the great and awesome God, who keeps his covenant and loving kindness for those who love him and keep his commandments. We have sinned, committed iniquity, acted wickedly, and rebelled, even turning aside from thy commandments and ordinances. Moreover, we have not listened to thy servants, the prophets, who spoke in thy name to our kings, our princes, our fathers, and all the people of the land. Righteousness belongs to thee, O Lord, but to us open shame, as it is this day, to the men of Judah, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and all Israel, who are those who are nearby and those who are far away in the countries to which thou hast driven them. because of their unfaithful deeds which they have committed against thee. So how do they approach the Lord in verse 3? So here again, this is right there before Esther's time. Now what do we see them doing? They're doing the same thing. Putting on the sackcloth and ashes. They're reaching to him in prayer. They're fasting. They're doing all these things that we see in the book of Esther that Mordecai and other Jews throughout the province and Esther herself and her maidens are doing. So we know that they're reaching out to the Lord. And I thought it was good that we understand, even though God's not mentioned, his remnant knew these stories. His remnant knew that they, how to approach God and what they needed to do. And so it's clearly seen, because we've talked about before, that God has made his promise to his remnant, that he will bring them through. We don't always understand how he's going to do it. Obviously, the people here did not know, but Mordecai, now something has been revealed to him, right? That God's going to do it. He says it at the end of Esther chapter 4, that God's going to deliver us one way or another, whether it be you, Esther, or not. God will deliver us, and he doesn't say God, but he's saying we will be delivered. And there again, he just went through these other steps of the sackcloth and ashes, wailing loudly, mourning, and it moves forward. So I think it's safe to say that there was some godliness going on at this time, and that the people were reaching out to God, and God's going to answer him. And we'll start to see that here in the later chapters of how God answers and God accomplishes what he wants to accomplish through Esther and Mordecai. Any questions? Any comments? That's right. Yes. Yes. So yes, as Ray pointed out, it all requires the faith too, and you've seen it in Esther. Whether I perish, I perish. There had to be some type of faith there, knowing that God's got it. Richard. Right. Yeah, and that's why I actually read about what God's expectations were, how we could approach him in the wrong way, too, because... Yeah, he did. He had mercy on Ahab. He had mercy on Nineveh. And do we really recognize that even as we're going through struggles and we ask for deliverance, it's his mercy that he's showing towards us too? Yes, sir. Yes. Yes, and that's what God, I mean, as we've seen, I believe it was Isaiah, where God told them that they need to rend their hearts. They needed to change the way they were. You don't just approach God and think that you can keep going the way you're going and that things God's going to answer. He wanted them to change. And once they would change, then he would accept their fasting. Their fasting was not acceptable to him when they continued in their ways. Any other comments? Well, I appreciate your guys' time, and Lord willing, I'll see you again next Wednesday, and we'll start in Esther chapter 5.